Committee. Today, we have Senate Bill 660, and I see that we have some members of the House and Senate here to make presentations, so I will ask for the briefest overview of the purposes of 660, and then defer to Representative Starr and Senator Atkinson, who will present their case for a tax-free internet.
Dick's going to do it, so it ain't going to be brief.
No, but it will be informative.
It'll be brief and confusing.
All right, Mr. Chair.
Just ask the introductor, Mr. Davis, would you care to be...
Let's do well live again.
Any, do you have any, do you bring any puce or anything in today? Any coloring for us?
No.
Only the green about your gills, Senator, in keeping with the holiday spirit.
I prefer fuchsia anyway.
Fuchsia, that was it.
Mr. Chair, the Senate Bill 660 prevents the state or any municipal corporation or political subdivision of the state from imposing a tax on electronic commerce, the internet, or use of the internet. It does grandfather in any tax which exists at this time. It also prohibits the state from assisting any other state or any other political subdivision of another state with the collection of a tax that they might choose to impose. The bill does not define electronic commerce. As you read it, I guess my thinking is you're talking about a sales tax or an excise tax, but it's not clear that it precluded an income tax. It may apply to that also.
So the dash one amendments are being even before we speak. Senator Beyer?
I guess a question, two questions around that. How would that apply to franchise fees the way they're currently in use? I mean, if it did preclude them, would it preclude their increase? And how would that apply to the discussion that Representative Shetterly's having around a business activity tax?
Well, I think it certainly would apply to the business activity tax.
It would preclude that?
That would be my interpretation at this point. We would, I suspect, want to get some comment from counsel.
Okay, I guess the question is, how would that be different since, as I understand the proposal, that's a tax on income of the business, not on the activity of the sales? And how is that different than an income tax?
Actually, I think to do justice to the concept, we would... probably need to have Representative Shetterly present the whole business activity taxes to the committee. It's quite unique, and it isn't as revolutionary a concept as some think it might be, but it does do it does tax incrementally at every addition of value. Normal costs that you'd see deducted from almost any business activity or a standard deduction for businesses. So, but it's quite an interesting concept, and I think what I'll do, if I have your permission, Mr. Vice Chairman, is to defer that question until we can actually get Mr. Shetterly to make a presentation of that concept at some point in the future.
Well, it is important, though, as we consider this. I'm supportive of this concept. It usually talks about a sales tax. I'm supportive of that, but I want to make sure that as I suspect we're going to pass this out, I would support the notion that we're not casting a wider net than is intended.
Actually, I think Ms. Harshenko can give us some insights into what a business activity tax does. Senator Minister?
It is on Senate Bill 660, reading the language, does this create a problem if the federal government imposed a tax this kind of activity?
No greater problem than a well-armed citizenry should be able to.
Well spoken. Yeehaw.
Actually, I think what we'll do now is, if there are no further questions, bring up the two members that we wish to
meet. The chair had the confusion for a moment. He thought he was a member of the Nevada legislature.
Yes. And we have before us now Posse Comitatus from the Senate. Thank you so much.
In spirit, I'm a member.
We know.
Not card carrying. gentlemen, if you can add some clarity to the obvious confusion, so you think it was a Monday morning here. Senator Atkinson.
Good morning. For the record, my name's Senator Jason Atkinson from Southern Oregon. And this earlier discussion, before we've even had a chance to present the bill, reminds me of why an 8 o'clock accounting class gave me the heebie-jeebies in graduate school, and I asked to take the class later in the afternoon, I think, when my mind was either sharper or number, perhaps number. But let me get to the bill at hand quickly, and I thank you for, Mr. Chair, for giving us a hearing on this, and I hope it does relieve all of you on the Revenue Committee not to hear a school finance bill for just a moment.
You have our gratitude.
And with that, we all know and have heard quite a bit about the new economy and the growth of the new economy and the difficulty in defining what is new economy, what is old economy. From the switches, I think there was a Pulitzer Prize book called that dealt with Standard Oil, actually, and that was always been the beacon of the old economy. Now you look at Amazon.coms and Powell Books and those kinds of companies, and we try to make the distinction of what is the new economy. We do know that the new economy has quite a bit to do with the Internet and e-businesses and businesses that make transactions over the Internet. This growth of the economy got fueled and really picked up speed in the late 1990s, and the federal government moved to try to keep the growth going by passing a federal moratorium on Internet taxes. I believe that passed both chambers under the Clinton administration in 98. When it was to come up for review, it came up for review, I believe, last year, and the House of Representatives passed the continuation of essentially the ban on Internet taxes, but the Senate failed to act, and so what we have today is we have a time place in which this October the federal moratorium expires. On a bipartisan note, I will say that Senator Wyden, on behalf of the issue, has also been trying to lead the charge to get the Senate to reconsider to keep the ban going, which is very interesting. And several weeks ago, he found out about our efforts here and made some very supportive comments, which were great to hear. What this bill does simply is it puts in place a state moratorium on Internet taxes into statute, not a referral, not constitutional, just into statute, to allow this to continue. And if you look at the bill just real quickly, it says it establishes a ban on taxation of Internet use or electronic commerce, and goes back to what was earlier described. And what we're trying to stop here is just we're trying to allow this economy to, or these businesses to continue to grow and to build and to site themselves here in Oregon, and to essentially make Oregon a safe haven of a place where you can set up this kind of company and really let it grow. We have testimony, I think, today. You'll hear some more delivered testimony with regard to some Internet startups like 800.com here in Oregon. And also, I think there's going to be some examples of some of the growth in business from businesses as diverse, not only from 800.com, but again back to Powell's Books, who is seeing a growth in business over the Internet. And so what we're trying to do is just take on a state level from what the federal government didn't continue on doing and have a ban on Internet taxes here in Oregon.
Questions for the Senator? President Starr, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Representative Bruce Starr from House District 3 in Hillsborough, Washington County. I appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning. My primary reason for supporting and signing on this bill is the opportunity to attract investment in Oregon. I think good reasons to ban the Internet tax here. And the opportunity for economic investment here, opportunity to bring economic growth to the state, to provide jobs for Oregonians in this industry, I think are all good reasons why we should support Senate Bill 660. I think for me that's the bottom line, is we have an opportunity here in Oregon to provide leadership. As the Senator mentioned, provide a safe haven here in Oregon for these companies to site here. And if you look at what some of the other states around the nation are doing, clearly their tax structure is different than ours here in Oregon. But I think that we would provide ourselves an advantage as you look at other states that are looking at taxing e-commerce and the internet. And I think it provides us a really good opportunity and one that we should take quick advantage of, and I'd encourage an aye vote and a rapid movement on this bill. Thank you.
Questions for the panel? Senator Corcoran and Senator Beyer.
Mr. Chair, well, so do you think that the notion that Oregon is so averse to a sales tax and that from perspective of the states that have a sales tax that are considering legislation like this, that we're better positioned to do that? I'm concerned about the impact, the potential impact. It says that potential revenue impact on state and local revenues, on one hand it sounds like a preemption bill, on the other hand it could be much ado about nothing because we don't have a sales tax now anyway.
Yeah.
Just like your comment on that.
Either
one of you.
Senator Farrelly, Senator Corcoran. I think it's more the latter than the former. In your example, we don't have it now. And I think what we're doing is we're just allowing people to take advantage of a structure that has been put into place. And we're essentially saying we're trying to keep us as a state government in a coaching role as far as promoting these companies. I'll give you an example. Many of you read a magazine that's published in Portland called Oregon Business Magazine. Probably a year ago, I should have brought the example in, but they often have reports of regions of the state and companies that are taking advantage of creative things. Baker County, I think Sherman County, there's an Eastern Oregon segment, there's Southern Oregon, there's a Midland Valley, and there's Northern Portland. And about a year ago, there was Senator Farrelly's district, there was an antique dealer who was just struggling. It was like in Condon, if I recall, a small Oregon town, who was struggling, and for the most part was going to close shop. The internet came along. He was able to make transactions over the internet and actually save the company, and has actually put him, if I recall correctly, created a niche of Tiffany lamps. He created this. He carved out this niche within e-commerce. If I remember correctly, again, I haven't read the article in about a year, but it's Tiffany lamps. So what do Tiffany lamps and small town in Eastern Oregon have to do, with the viability of that economy? Well, we have the vehicle through the internet. And so what I would say is to your question is I think that it's allowing people to grow. In an environment that we already have, and this protects it in statute.
Senator Atkinson, I'm going to disclose a little-known feature of the town of Condon. There is, in fact, a Powell's bookstore in Condon. It is, in fact, owned by Mr. Powell, the same Powell who owns the block square Powell's bookstore in Portland.
Senator, I'll make a further comment that in the front of that bookstore is perhaps the best milkshake purchase in that part of the town, and part of the county, and I have bought a book and a milkshake there before.
Well,
I get the impression you're...
That's economic development.
In regards to the shop, you don't see much internet commerce in milkshakes. On the contrary...
Not yet.
You see an awful lot of internet commerce on books, and Powell's bookstore is, in fact, I think probably could be the same case as the Tiffany Lamp manufacturer in Condon. The bookstore has a market of the greater Portland area until you look at the global market that's created by the internet. And I think that's the kind of thing that you see. The economy of scale works either at the very micro end of the spectrum of business, but it also works at the very macro end of the spectrum of business. Senator Corcoran,
I want to follow up with one question, Mr. Chair, and that is that under the provisions of your bill, you really do create a preemption for municipal corporations and other political subdivisions of the state. Why, if you intended this to be a state, a bill that had an influence on state government, would you include local governments?
Well, in the original, Senator Farrelly, Senator Corcoran, in the original drafting of the bill, at the time that, if you notice, this has a fairly low number, at the time that I was drafting the bill, a lot of the information that I was getting and reading about, not only around, mainly in other states, were having the effects of a very, very different municipalities jumping from taxing the internet essentially to some that don't, some that do, some that don't. And you have this checkerboard effect. And looking at where I'm from in rural Oregon, I didn't think that was the best way to address public policy. And you know, I'll give you another small town example, Shuffle Toys. And I live in a town that has, I think we just changed our sign from 1,850 people. I think we're up to 2,200 people now live in the town of Jacksonville. We are
a jail.
What's that?
Must have built a jail.
We have the same one since the 1880s.
Okay.
For more history, see me later. And I've got I could probably get you in there if you'd like to.
I've been there. I mean, not inside.
You spent the night there?
I've been in Jacksonville. Wonderful place.
Shuffles Toys, a small toy shop, high-end toys, tourist, you know, seasonal. Now does, I think they told me, over a majority of their business over the internet. I just thought it was a better policy to address the whole state as far as having a moratorium and letting everybody have a chance at that rather than doing a checkerboarded approach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Question, Senator Beyer?
I just wanted to be clear. I think your intent was really to preclude a sales tax, wasn't it?
On internet commerce, correct.
And that's really what you're thinking about the sales tax.
Absolutely.
Any questions? Colleagues, I really appreciate you presenting your case for this bill. I'd like to ask you to remain, if you would, please. I know that impinges on your schedule, at least through the next presentation. We have with us today Elizabeth Harchenko from the Department of Revenue, and I think she brings a perspective fresh from the National Conference on issues relating directly to e-business and e-taxation. So if you can.
Senator, if I could excuse myself, I'm actually going to testify in another bill in another committee.
Understandable. I understand that you are welcome here at any time. And
thank
if your
you very
schedule
much.
Takes you away, we understand why.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Harchenko, if you could come forward and share with the committee the national perspective on e-commerce taxation, and I think that will give a counterpoint to some of the issues that we have before us.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Harchenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. Yesterday morning, at this time, I was just concluding testimony before the U.S. Senate Committee on Commerce on Internet taxation. The Senate Commerce Committee has been very interested in the issue of taxes as they relate to the Internet and transactions that take place over the Internet for the last 3 years. As Senator Atkinson pointed out, Senator Wyden was one of the co-sponsors of the Internet Tax Freedom Act, which was passed in 1998. That bill prohibited states from imposing taxes on access to the Internet, not on sales or transactions that take place on the Internet. There were a few states that had already enacted bit taxes or byte taxes that actually were imposed on the relationship between a subscriber and an internet service provider, and the Congress felt it very important to stop that activity until they could evaluate sort of where the internet was going and growing. The hearing yesterday was very interesting because Senator Wyden has introduced a bill to extend the moratorium. He would extend it permanently. The issues have grown up quite a bit around collection of sales taxes on transactions that take place through the Internet. Even though Oregon doesn't have a sales tax, we are in the definite minority across the country. There are 40 states that do have taxes, and they're all struggling with how to deal with the new economy, or what I would term the blended economy, because what we're seeing, especially in the retail sector now, is business entities recognizing that the Internet provides a very attractive, very convenient new channel for their customers to interact with them and engage in transactions with them. but that people still appreciate and want very much the physical store where they can go in, check out whatever it is that they're interested in purchasing, learn more about it, comparison shop, and then if it's very convenient for them to order over the internet and have it delivered to their home. And we had testimony from people from the retail sector talking about this this recognition that the internet now is providing one way to enhance customer service for very traditional businesses that have been around in bricks and mortar buildings and on Main Street for years and years. As Senator Atkinson pointed out, it's also provided a tremendous opportunity for very small business to reach a much broader market than they would otherwise if limited only to walk-in traffic in their local community. The kinds of issues that the Congress is considering, in my view, I believe that the Internet Tax Freedom Act, a moratorium on taxation of access to the Internet, will be continued. I don't know whether it will be continued for another period of time or whether it will be continued indefinitely. I didn't hear any comments from any of the senators yesterday that indicated that they would just as soon see that moratorium go away. The bigger issue was, what do we do about transactions that take place in the Internet? What do we do about the fact that we have a lot of people in the retail community coming into the Congress and saying, look, we have we provide jobs in communities. We have buildings to maintain. We have inventory that we have to have physically present in our stores. And because of all that physical presence in a community where the state or the local government imposes a sales tax, we have to collect sales tax on transactions that take place in our store. And we think that there should be a level playing field, that the medium through which a transaction takes place should not establish a tax advantage. It should be tax neutral. So the argument has shifted away from should taxes on access to the Internet be allowed or not. That seems to be now assumed that the answer to that is no, to how should the tax structure treat transactions that are fundamentally achieving the same result if they're occurring through different mediums. So that's what most of the debate has been around at the federal level. What the states have done, who have sales taxes, is they've gotten together, they recognize, because they've heard from not only Internet retailers, but also their own retailers in their local communities, that sales tax administration is very difficult, it's expensive, and there's a lot of 20/20 hindsight involved in determining whether the correct amount of tax has been collected and remitted. And for most retailers, if they don't do it right and collect the appropriate amount of sales tax from a customer at the time a transaction is made, they're going to have to pay for the difference out of their pocket, and they don't have the ability to go back and recoup that from the customer. So there's been a high level of concern expressed on the part of all the retailers that there needs to be predictability, simplicity, and uniformity in the administration of sales taxes. So the states have been working very, very hard to try to reach those objectives. If you look at Senator Wyden's new bill, which is S-288, he sets forth some standards for the states to meet before the Congress will support collection of sales tax on retail transactions that take place through the Internet. And most of those have to do with uniform administration, uniformity or at least predictability of rates and rate changes, streamlined auditing procedures, reduction of the number of returns that retailers have to file. He also calls for a minimum threshold of national sales activity before a retailer should be required to collect sales tax for transactions made to a customer in a state other than the state in which the retailer has physical presence. There's a lot of stuff sort of swirling around this issue at the national level.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Jordan.
Elizabeth, I understand that you were back there, and I understand that you supported some of those taxes. Could you tell us about the position that you took representing our state?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator George. I'm the chair of the Multi-State Tax Commission. which is body that's created by state laws. Oregon is a member of that commission, and I was appearing as the chair of the commission, and I was not taking a position on behalf of the state of Oregon, but on behalf of the commission and all of the member states of that commission.
And what position did you take?
The position that I took was that the states need the Congress to support the state's efforts to streamline the sales taxes. And that, so I talked mostly about the relationships between the state and the states and the federal government under principles of federalism. I also talked about the level playing field issue that we hear a lot in the state about, everywhere in the states, about tax neutrality, that taxes should not be such an influence on business decisions that they distort economic reality, and that the Congress recognizes that, and that we need their support in doing the part that the states need to do to make sure that that tax neutrality is present in this issue of transactions taking place over the internet as opposed to in other ways.
Would you agree that when people come to visit Oregon, many times they'll fill their motorhome or whatever with items that were purchased here with no sales tax? I mean, aren't we in a sense, because we don't have a sales tax violating that neutrality position, are you actually advocating that we have some sort of sales tax?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator George, absolutely not. States should have, and this is one of the things that I try to emphasize the most, states and local governments need to have the flexibility to establish their own tax policy. What's good for Oregon is something that the legislature needs to decide.
Senator George, we've got an interesting anomaly in Oregon. I think we're just 10 states that don't feature kind of a sales tax?
Five.
You'd think that people would be not only loading their motorhomes, but loading their moving vans to come to this community, these communities, and open their businesses here. And to a varying extent, you could argue that that's not happening. But what is happening is that our retailers are watching the avoidance on the things that we have sales tax on. For instance, I understand that you can make a wine order to certain distributorships outside the state of Oregon, and they'll arrange to meet you in a parking lot in Ashland or somewhere close to the south end of the state of Oregon and unload those by the case. And, of course, that may be a wonderful benefit to the consumer, but the state looks at that as a revenue line. And then we heard earlier that each container load of cigarettes that's moved into the state without a tax stamp is worth $350,000 in revenue loss to the state. So, you know, we've got some tax avoidance going on, and the question is, will Oregon maintain its relative advantages of tax haven on sales tax by not having one? And does that become more important in the internet economy than it's been in the traditional economy? And I think that's what this bill speaks to. I think Senator Corcoran's already raised the issues of preemption as a principle. But the other thing is, how does Oregon fit within the 50 states? You know, and if all 50 of us are going to have tax neutrality on the internet and e-commerce, that's great. Maybe we ought to look at the potentials of advantage and the question of how long advantage lasts in the e-market. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to, Ms. Archenko, to bring forward this concept that 40 states are cooperating on a national set of principles to try to do something about the issue that doesn't create such disequity that it tears up the union that we have with the 50 other states in terms of tax. I don't want Oregonians having to collect taxes for 50 other or 49 other states. That's not very rational. Mm-hmm. But if we're disadvantaged somehow by a policy that we develop locally, we've got to be aware that anything that we do is going to have implications in the future. Senator Beyer, and then Ms. Archenko, I guess a wrap on, have there been any decisions made at the federal level or at least in Congress about what direction people seem to be going? And what is the timeline that the organization is working on? Are they going to conclude their work within the next 2 years, do you think?
Did you want
Senator Beyer, have a question.
No.
Actually, I just wanted to, maybe I just throw the question, you can work it in, Elizabeth.
Okay.
Really, I'm curious how different the internet question is from the traditional question of catalog sales. And it's been an issue forever,
mm-hmm.
and how to collect that. And different states have tried to treat that in different ways. And some states have, I know, have said, if you sell into Oregon, you still have to try to collect the tax or pay it yourself. You don't have to if you're selling into another state. In fact, if you're a customer, if you go into Washington State and show your driver's license, you don't have to pay sales tax. If you go to California, they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You pay it anyway.
Mr. Chair, I'll take Senator Barr's question and then go back to yours. The issue really is the question whether the states have the authority to compel someone who is selling into the state and taking advantage of the market, taking advantage of the benefits that the state provides through a civil society, a court system, in case they have a contract issue or a bad debt issue that they have to enforce, the transportation systems that allow delivery of the goods, to take advantage of that market without contributing to the support of it, of that infrastructure. And you're right, the issue has been around for a long time with respect to catalog sales. There's a case that was decided by the United States Supreme Court in 1992 that said that for catalog sales, that unless the seller had a physical presence in a state, that state could not compel the seller to collect sales tax on behalf of the state. And so what is happening now, in addition to the catalog sales, is in this now burgeoning area of internet sales, is that the internet sellers are under the same standard. If they have physical presence in a state, then they do have enough connection with the state that the state can say, you must collect sales tax as the agent of the state, because that's what retailers are. It's just like we have employers collect payroll taxes. That's how most of the income tax comes into the state of Oregon. Employers are a collection agent. The same thing is true in the sales tax. The retailer is the collection agent on behalf of the state. And so the court said, and so the extending that court decision from 1992 to the internet model, internet retailers that are not, don't have a physical presence in a state, don't collect sales tax for states into which they're selling. The we heard about yesterday during the testimony about companies that have made their choices about where they site warehouses or distribution centers around the edges of market states, but to take advantage of either a lower sales tax rate or no sales tax, and then selling into that market state. So there are a lot of issues about fairness, which is something that clearly is subjective. There are a lot of issues about coming forward from more traditional retailers who maybe have their substantial presence is physical throughout the states, and yet they are beginning to move into the internet world because, as I said, it's a channel that customers like to have available to them. And they're saying, we've got physical presence everywhere, so we have to collect. And yet these companies that don't, that their presence is strictly through a website, are not, and we're having to compete with them on price and compete with them on value, and they're not having to collect sales tax. And in some states, that's 5% or more price differential. So there's a lot of battling that's just going on even within the retail community about how this all ought to
I think the last iteration was that if a company had no physical presence but offered a point of service for under warranty, the courts considered that enough of a physical presence that then there was a tax liability created. So the courts are seeking a way, I think, or looking at ways to further connect catalog sales, e-commerce, and interstate commerce with a physical presence, even if it's through a third party that offers an authorized service. So we have just recently been informed that a warranty service center is enough of a physical presence to connect a company with the state. It can be that tenuous.
Well, Mr. Chair, actually there are two different standards whether you're talking about collection of sales taxes for a state or you're talking about liability for doing business taxes in a state. And I believe the standard that you just described is the doing business standard. It's not the sales tax collection standard.
Senator Byer had a follow-up question.
Just curiosity. So if, I'm not sure they do it exactly, so it's Gateway Computers. If they're setting a in downtown Seattle, you walk in there, and if you would buy a computer from the store, you'd have to pay, I think it's 8.5% sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
If you walk into Gateway Computers and it's their showroom, you decide to buy one and they went over and say, well, here you go, this one's connected to the internet. Take out your credit card, swipe it through there and order your computer and we'll deliver it to you tomorrow.
With no sales tax.
From Portland, Oregon. Tax.
That's what is starting to happen, is that companies are starting to set up kiosks in their stores, and we've heard stories about a variety of different models, but essentially it's have the showroom, have the internet kiosk for the customer to order and pay, and then because they've created a separate corporate identity for the kiosk,
mm-hmm.
The assertion on the part of some companies is that that's an internet transaction and that they don't have to collect sales tax on it. Because the company that it, with whom the customer is interacting through that kiosk isn't physically present in the state. So what we're starting to see now is discussion about companies setting up special subsidiaries and deliberately structuring their business in order to avoid collection of sales tax. So for the local computer company that isn't a national company marketing nationally that's trying to sell computers, they have no ability to do that. And the big national company has the ability to do that. And so that's where the level playing field argument comes from. When you talk to the retailers, that's exactly where they're coming from, is they're saying there's no substantive difference between these two transactions. There's a form difference. And that what the argument is that the form is being elevated over the substance of the transaction.
You're seeing it.
And
Sears and Roebuck does that.
There are a number of companies that are doing it or are exploring doing it. Can I add, I need to add one other aspect to the debate that's going on at the federal level that even though Oregon doesn't have a sales tax, you need to be advised on. And I need to go back to the proceedings of the Advisory Commission on Electronic Commerce that was created as a part of the Internet Tax Freedom Act of 1998 and had their proceedings during 1999 and wrapped up in early 2000. The recommendation was made through that commission to also limit the state's ability to impose their doing business taxes with respect to business done using electronic commerce. And it was a set of standards that would have limited Oregon's ability to collect its doing business taxes from companies that, by all visual ways of looking, are doing business here.
Define that, doing business tax.
Our corporate income tax. Our corporate income tax / excise tax is a tax that's paid for the privilege of doing business in the state. And the quid pro quo from the state is, if you come into the state to do business, you take advantage of our infrastructure, you take advantage of our employment base, you take advantage of raw materials, labor force, markets, court system, and it's appropriate for the state to ask a fair share of, in return of tax on the income earned from the business activities in the state. That's a fundamental theory of a doing business tax.
Would that apply then, Elizabeth, to a value-added tax or a business activity tax?
Well, the discussion about the taxes was very broad. The context in which the conversation was taking place would include any state's tax on business, whether it's Washington State's gross mm-hmm. receipts tax or a net income tax or Michigan's single business tax. It was intended to be very broad in scope. So that's gotten linked now to this issue of collection of sales taxes. And I have to tell you, the states are very concerned. I'm very concerned as your tax administrator that it would make administration of the law of this state very, very difficult to do because of the way that the standards were written. So there's a lot of conversation that's going on about the business taxes as well. Mr. Chair, I know your time is short. I'd like to just raise a couple of questions that, as you consider this legislation, you need to ask yourselves.
We'll do that.
As a tax administrator.
We have two questions that have piled up here.
Oh, okay.
One Senator Castillo's and one of Senator Vest.
All right.
And Senator Portman.
And then Senator Portman.
So on now, it's not clear to me, would this bill affect current taxes on business activities, such as I know we have some communities or maybe one community now that has a real estate transfer tax or a room tax, things like that. If those were done electronically then, would those would there be a way to get around those taxes by conducting that business electronically? If this bill were to pass, I guess I'm just trying to figure out how it affects other taxes that we currently have that communities are using to pay for services in their community that they would no longer be able to collect if this were to pass, if that commerce was then done electronically. Does it have an effect on that kind of business or not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Castillo, I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
The way the language is written is extraordinarily broad. And where I was going to go next was the kinds of administrative questions that we would be asking you to clarify for us in order to be able to administer legislation like this. When you look at the Internet Tax Freedom Act, and I understood from Senator Atkinson's testimony that what his intent was to make sure that kind of act made it down to the state level in case it's not extended at the federal level. It's very, very narrowly written, and this language is quite broad, and it refers to the internet, and it also refers to electronic commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And putting my old lawyer hat on just for the moment, if I see a statute that refers to the internet and then also refers to electronic commerce, I assume that those are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Electronic commerce now has been very, very broadly defined. In fact, it's very fuzzy what people mean when they refer to electronic commerce anymore. As we talk about it in state agencies and talk about using electronic commerce to provide better service to citizens and more information to citizens about their government, we think about web-enabled technology and we think about transactions that we have with citizens, whether it's them renewing a driver's license or paying for car registration or buying a fishing license or doing any one of a number of financial transactions using web-enabled technology. We tried to sort of use that electronic commerce phrase to refer to that in this context. But in a tax context, I'm not sure what it refers to. We're seeing convergence now in technology and in communications. And I don't know how many of you have PCs at home or web access at home, but I do. And I just switched from using my telephone line to access the internet to using my cable to access the internet. And I got an advertisement in the mail the other day from the phone company, the local phone company, saying, finally, we can give you all of it for one price. We can give you your wireless telephone access, your hardwire telephone access, your long distance, and your internet access for one fee on one bill, and you've got it all. And so I'm thinking, okay, so is all of that electronic commerce? Is just the internet access electronic commerce? I think the telecommunications industry could make a very strong case that they are in the e-commerce business.
Mm-hmm.
I think the cable people would make a strong case that they're in the e-commerce business. So there's a lot of detail that isn't present in this bill at this time that I would ask for guidance on in order to be able to administer it. So I would know whether I stop collecting the 911 emergency services fee,
mm-hmm.
or whether I stop collecting corporate income taxes on companies that are doing business using the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure from what I heard of the sponsor's testimony that's their intent, and so there would need to be some clarification.
On the consumption taxes, the hotel motel room tax,
mm-hmm.
and the I think the other example that you used,
real estate transfer tax.
Yeah, I can imagine that someone would or could possibly set up an e-commerce transaction in the Bank of the Cayman Islands for the rental of a hotel room, it's possible, but, you know, I wouldn't think that that would stop the local jurisdiction from doing a census count on the number of rooms rented and demanding the taxes.
But you can make reservations through, you know, through the internet. Mm-hmm. You can. So if you made a reservation for a motel room in Oregon, and it was e-commerce, so you get around the room tax.
Or
that
prepaid. Event,
or prepaid.
In a different state.
Yeah.
Senator Minnis has a question.
Well, it's kind of a question, a series of questions in the statement. I think Ms. Orshenko was right on target. I think you could through this to mean a credit card transaction
mm-hmm.
in JCPenney's.
Mm-hmm.
Which happens in another state, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, what exactly. So I think that the whole definition of electronic commerce needs to be explored because I think it's very problematic the way it's written. But the question I have is with respect to this bill. It says relating to taxation, that's the relating clause, and yet it goes on to talk about the state may not impose or collect a tax, which clearly fits under the relating clause, but then goes on to talk about a fee or a charge. A fee or a charge, in my opinion, doesn't seem to fit under the relating clause in terms of taxation, unless we're now declaring fees and charges taxation, taxes. So, I mean, it's kind of a narrow little the point, but I think it's an important point because I don't know that this bill is broadly, you know, the relating clause is broad enough to really include, and it may not be broad enough to include some of the stuff that we're talking about with respect to electronic commerce either. The other thing is, I don't know if the word internet is defined anywhere to the extent that we can reference it. I don't know if the federal government has a definition that's in the federal code that we can reference back to in state law, or whether, you know, in the minds of some certified smart, you know, computer gurus, you come up with something else that's called the internet, or could be construed to be the internet that's some other kind of a device. So I never want to underestimate the capacity of lawyers to really, you know, push the envelope on definitions and meanings and so on and so forth. So I just kind of a word of caution here. It seems to me that if the state did impose a sales tax at some point, or a VAT tax, or whatever the Senator Shetler, or Representative Shetler is calling his, whether or not we could, under the language fee or charge or tax, impose that under the language of this bill, I don't know.
I think the question about relating clause might be one that we could explore with legislative council. I think a fee is a tax if the cost of the services don't relate to the fee. In other words, if the fee is excessive or doesn't directly relate to the cost of providing services, it's been determined to be a form of taxation.
Yeah, but there may be a perfectly rational reason why that might
be. Or they might have just been a mistake. We have Senator Corcoran, and then I hear Senator George clearing his throat over there, and we will go to Senator George.
Well, I had 2 points to make. One, Senator Menace made, and that was internet. Now we have intranet. I mean, I wonder if there are definitions for these. And I think Ms. Orshenko has sort of raised the policy questions that are pretty extraordinary in looking at the broad language of this. But there's one area that I kind of focus on, and that's sort of saving small bookstores in Oregon. And so I have my little book mine in Cottage Grove. I go in the book mine, and Gail and Bertie, you know, order a book. I don't know how the hell they do it. They have a microfiche, and I don't know if they make a phone call. They do it on the internet. They're not very technological. But I get my book a week later. Then you have Powell's, which has a physical presence in Oregon mm-hmm. and also has this extreme business on the internet. And then you have probably some, mm-hmm. you know, buyabook.com that has no physical presence in Oregon, that you can go up to and order a book. It seems to me that we'd actually, if we went through with this prohibition as we're looking at it now, that could actually have a negative consequence on some Oregon businesses because of their physical presence in the first place. As you pointed out, they'd be paying property tax, they'd be paying payroll tax and so forth, where buyabook.com, I just wonder if they would be paying any tax system, because ultimately the book's still going to arrive in Oregon by UPS. You know? I mean, ultimately the physical transportation of the book in Oregon, once it's ordered, is going to be about the same.
And like Senator Minnis pointed out, I might buy it with a credit card at Gale and Birdie's, or I might type in on my computer my credit card and expiration date on buyabook.com. But, I mean, from that point forward, the transaction's almost identical. Isn't there, couldn't there be potentially a disadvantage to our own homegrown bookstores in terms of tax treatment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, if you were to set aside completely the issue of sales tax collection and assume for the moment that no state had a sales tax, the method by which people choose to do business is changing. And the economy is going to figure out where the value is. But for the small bookseller who's got a bookstore and is selling to people who come in off the street and want to browse and have a cup of coffee or a milkshake, they're providing something that books online can't provide. They don't provide the milkshake. They don't provide the tables to sit and browse through the books and have the companionship and everything else. So the argument runs that there's something that that physical place offers that the virtual place doesn't. At the same time, the people who have the physical place have costs that the virtual place doesn't. And so you'll see, again, separate completely from sales tax issues, you'll see that a very, very large bookseller can have a big inventory, buy books at a marginally less price than if for the small seller who's ordering your book specifically for you and isn't stocking thousands of copies. They're maintaining a retail environment where the online bookseller is all they have to deal with is wholesale and big warehouses and automated shipping. So the issues are there in the economy, separate from the tax issues. The question I'm raising and that was raised at the committee is, should taxes affect that economic reality in any way, or should they be neutral as to that and have the real genuine economic issues be what, how citizens and consumers decide how they want to purchase goods?
But just as booksonline.com doesn't support the local Little League team, which most certainly the BookMine does, the BookMine doesn't have the flooring costs for a 200,000 mm-hmm. volume inventory, which the BookMine does, yet the BookMine, which booksonline.com does have, this warehouse, but the BookMine has instantaneous access and drop shipping capability and a markup potential for the whole inventory of books.com, because they can order your book and get it in a week from that seller as well. So I think that, the little store might be disadvantaged by the competitiveness of the books online marketing strategy, or they might gain from having a local identity connection mm-hmm. with the community.
Absolutely.
And I don't know how to measure those things, which is more valuable. But in fact, the booksonline.com benefits from having the point of presence of the BookMine if they sell the inventory through that front door, and the BookMine benefits from having access to the inventory. And in fact, in a blended commerce, which I think you talked about earlier, I'm not sure who has the greater advantage, or even if there is one, but the structural difference in how we do commerce, whether it's the form or the substance, has great implications for us in tax policy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great thing to help consumers avoid taxes, but not if you can't afford to provide the services that government provides as a result of that. So, interesting stuff. Senator George has got the floor.
I'll wait for other testifiers. We're already an hour.
We are, but I think this is fascinating stuff. What I'm going to do, Mr. Archenko,
that's cool.
Thank you, is bring up Mr. Craven, who represents the e-commerce industry and the e's in the electronic manufacturers, the AEA and et cetera. If you could come up, Mr. Cravens, and essentially give us the maybe how the technological community looks at this issue. And then we've got the other testimony by the taxpayers associations, the sponsors of this bill, and folks from local governments who may have something to say about preemption.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association.
A whole lot of e-commerce happens by people who aren't my members. We build the internet. A number of our companies obviously make
computers. I thought Al Gore did that.
Pardon me?
I thought Al Gore built the internet.
Actually, a gentleman named Bennett Cerf, but he did endorse Al Gore for president. So, I appreciate Ms. Archenko's testimony because I think she outlined a lot of the big issues that we're wrestling with nationally. Our staff in Washington, D.C., we have a person working almost full-time just on this issue, I think was in the audience yesterday when Ms. Archenko testified. So truly, how do we figure this out? Oregon's in a very much a different space than a lot of my colleagues because we don't have a sales tax. For a lot of people, this is a huge, burning, real-time issue right now. So we try to figure out the transactions and taxes in this in new digital economy, not shortchange local government and state governments who, in their lack of wisdom, rely on a sales tax to fund their form of government, unlike Oregon. The American Electronics Association really has 3 points we just nationally and that affect this bill. One, we do and did work with Senator Wyden on the Internet Tax Moratorium and Tax Freedom Act. And I think we just have to always say every time we mention that act, and Ms. Archenko did say that, that was a moratorium on new discriminatory fees on the Internet. It is sometimes characterized as a preemption on sales taxes on Internet sales. It is not. It did not undo the ability of states, following the Supreme Court decision in the mail order case, to collect internet taxes on sales. So the issue that it did affect is levying new access fees on the internet. A very unpopular thing, I might add, with your constituents and with the voters across this country, if you can believe polling, they do not want to pay time on the net charges. They do not want local or state governments taxing their online time. A couple of years ago, the city of Tacoma bravely tried to enter this field, and this is before as many people had the internet as they do today. It didn't succeed, and that was one of the things that led to this moratorium. So the moratorium's in place. It expires October 21st. Congress will probably do something, but we can't fail to take action in Oregon based upon what Congress may or may not do this fall after you're adjourned and don't come back for 2 years. We also, AEA nationally, supports a permanent ban on access fees upon internet usage. I think this has become almost a no-brainer and a consensus position that we don't want to put a nickel a minute or that kind of fee upon people's use of the internet. So I think that will move forward at the national level. And thirdly, we do support the ongoing efforts by the states to simplify the whole sales tax collection issue because, you think of it, I don't know, I hear various 12,000, 17,000, 30,000, something with sales taxing entities in the United States. We would barely be having a debate if there were 50 or if there were only 45 sales tax entities. In other words, the states that have a sales tax at a uniform rate, we could wrap up this issue, I think, in a fairly quick time frame. The problem is the plethora of sales taxing entities. You know, you go to Oakland, California, you're paying state of California sales tax, a local county sales tax, a BART rapid transit increment, which all add up to an effective rate, and those rates vary block by block. You go to different parts of the country, so you think of the challenge of internet commerce, of the poor person trying to sell Tiffany lamps from Condon, Oregon, having some fairly sophisticated software, so when that person gets an order from a address in Nebraska or some other state, knowing exactly what the effective sales tax rate for that block address where they're trying to ship the product. It's not possible to do, but it's a fairly tall order in terms of building a database that would basically have to know the effective sales tax rate at every street address in America for this to move forward. So what we're trying to say at the national level is simplify that if you don't want this thing to go totally south and for government to lose its ability to collect revenues, the states have to get on board in finding a solution to that. And as you well know from doing the other thing you do in this committee with school formulas and such, getting a lot of local and state governments to figure out in precise formulas and how you're going to split up the revenue and allocate is not an easy task, but it's an essential task at the national level to solve this issue of how do we effectively allocate sales taxes in the new digital economy. To the bill, I think in looking at the bill, and I appreciate this being brought forward by the members and the Citizens for Sound Economy, and hopefully they'll get a chance to defend their own bill here in a moment. I do think the phrase electronic commerce may be problematic in this bill. You've all raised all the issues that that language raises and probably needs a little look, because I don't think it's there. I'll let them speak to their own intentions. I don't think it is the intention here to exclude companies doing an e-business from paying corporate excise taxes in Oregon. I really don't think that was the intent, and it may be just a drafting issue. I think the issue is the internet and use of the internet. Those words in the bill, I believe, are key. And there is a definition in a number of bills bouncing around the building. The council has fashioned the definition of the internet. We could go pull that out of council and insert that in the bill if that would meet Senator Menace's questions. And so I think this is perhaps needs a bit of work, but I think it is a popular take-home issue for every member of this legislature to send a signal to your constituents that Oregon wants to, you know, at least address the issue of access fees. We don't have a sales tax, probably aren't going to have one soon in this state, but also saying that we want to protect your ability to freely use the internet without government coming in, tacking on discriminatory fees on top. I think that's the key issue here, and not doing unintended consequences of motel taxes and 911 fees or anything like that. So I think there is a way to get to where we want to get to with this bill without upsetting the apple cart and having unintended outcomes. So.
Mr. Cravens, you've offered an excellent segue into the Citizens for Sound Economy, at whose request we have this bill. So I'd like to bring Citizens for Sound Economy, Russ Walker, Jeff Vanek up, followed by some other folks who from taxpayers' associations and others who would like to testify to this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I've brought some prepared testimony.
Yes, please.
One is let me go ahead and introduce the testimony first. One is my testimony. Second is testimony of Greg Drew, CEO of 800.com, who's a member of our organization. And then the third is an issue analysis on this issue specifically, which will clear up some of the questions you had. Many of the questions related to the nexus issue, many of the questions related to the issue regarding taxation by what was being described by Elizabeth of cartels, multi-state cartels, to tax, to find ways to collect their sales tax and collect their use taxes. So, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about what's in the issue analysis at the end of my testimony. Russ Walker with Citizens for Sound Economy. Thank you very much again for having the opportunity to testify here on the 2001 Internet Tax Ban Bill. We represent Citizens for Sound Economy, represents somewhere between 8,000 and 12,000 members here in the state of Oregon based on the regular activity throughout the year. COC has been fighting for less regulation, lower taxes, and more economic freedom since our founding in 1984. For the past 3 years, COC has been educating our membership and the public at large about the dangers of an internet tax and tax cartels that tax cartels impose onto consumers. Oregon consumers are particularly threatened by such schemes. A tax cartel would place an undue regulatory burden on Oregon.
Excuse me.
Yes.
What is a tax cartel?
Yeah.
That's actually what they're calling. For instance, the bill that was introduced in the state of North Carolina is known as. It's referred to as a cartel, multi-states coming together to simplify their codes. so that they can simplify the process of collecting use taxes and sales taxes from one another regarding internet sales. And
what are you talking about, state government?
Well, multi-state governments, yeah. I mean, the use of the word cartel is
described. Well, the United
described.
States is a multi-state government. Is that what you're talking about?
No, we're not talking about the United States government. What we're talking about is, and if you want, I can describe the two different plans for you.
Okay, well, I guess the question of the choice of the word cartel, I know what I'm feeling when I hear the word oil cartel. I know what I feel a certain amount of rage without having to.
Well, if you'd like to use coalition, how's that sound? Multi-state coalition.
Or government.
Well, I think it describes something a little different than what is occurring because...
Okay, well, I don't want to get mired in the details.
Yeah.
Go ahead and hear. You know, this bill, I think, has within it some genius about making a strong statement about not prohibiting or inhibiting access to Internet transactions. I think that's the genius of this bill.
Right.
And if you can inform us about that genius, I'd like to hear about that.
Sure. Yeah, specifically, let me just go ahead then. You can read through my testimony. I'll go ahead and skip it. It's 2.5 pages long. But I'll go ahead and just describe the two plans out there to tax or collect taxes from Oregon businesses.
Mm-hmm.
First is the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Project, otherwise known as STTP. And then there is the proposed National Conference of State Legislators plan, the NCSL plan, collect taxes. Now, when I speak about a multi-state coalition or coalition, what we're talking about
not
is
a cartel. Now that's what you're talking.
Cartel. What we're talking about is multi-states coming together in either one of these two plans. Essentially, one plan. Both plans are put together for the purpose, and the issue analysis describes it. The purpose of figuring out a way to collect use taxes that are currently not being collected. So, specifically, in other words, if the state of Oregon, 800.com, and Greg Drew sell a product like a big screen TV to a customer from the state of New York, or better yet, let's use North Carolina, currently they do not have the burden of the responsibility to collect the sales tax for the state of North Carolina. That burden lies on the consumer himself to report it in the yearly tax reports under a line which is known as the use tax line. Most states that have sales tax today or use taxes do not have that use tax line on their tax forms for the general public. Businesses in most states are aware of that use tax and comply with it. Most consumers don't. Most average consumers and households don't because they're not aware of it. Aware of the use tax and that they have to report it each year. What STTP and the NCSL plan to do is require 800.com or another Oregon business like Powell's Books or even smaller Oregon businesses to collect that tax for the state of North Carolina. That is their desire. What North Carolina did was they recently, in the last 2 years, put that line on their tax reform, on their tax forms. Presently, and you'll notice in the analysis, there is a table that describes what has happened over the last couple of years since they placed that line and the increase in revenue as reported in the use tax. That's really the core issue involved here. Whether or not an Oregon business, .com business or brick-and-mortar/.com business, should have to be required to collect use and sales taxes for another jurisdiction. And that's the purpose of the bill. The bill is designed to protect Oregon businesses from what can become a very complicated and burdensome regulatory structure. If Oregon businesses are required to, and Jim mentioned that there were literally quotes of thousands of different tax jurisdictions, we used the figure of about 7,000 tax jurisdictions around the state, around the country. And that can become very burdensome, especially when you add in the mix that the plan of STTP and the NCSL is to place monitoring, private monitoring companies, give them the authority to monitor businesses within the state of Oregon and the states that are controlled by this coalition or cartel, and use that business, which is subsidized by taxpayer money from those states, to investigate and collect and make sure that the taxes are being collected by businesses involved in the coalition or even outside the coalition. So really what you have is you have another layer, if you will, a tax collection layer being put in place by these coalitions that would that Oregon businesses would be responsible to report to, which could be very burdensome. And that's really the core issue here, and that's what we're trying to address. We're trying to address, make it possible for Oregon businesses not only to continue to operate on the Internet, selling products, selling the things that they produce, but also keep them from being affected by this burdensome regulatory structure that would be placed upon them by other states. And I do want to address a couple things that came up, specifically a level playing field or tax neutrality issue, as well as the issue of nexus. The issue of nexus, most of you, I think, are probably aware, requires a company to have presence, physical presence in that state, and they are responsible then for collecting that tax. This would not affect that. For instance, like a Lands' End or some catalog company or an internet company that has physical presence in that state would not be affected by this. They would still be required to collect those taxes. It would also not affect. Our intent would not be to affect the collection of use taxes by states like North Carolina. North Carolina wants to collect a use tax. They should be responsible for collecting that tax themselves. They should not have the authority to require Oregon businesses to do their job for them. If they have a problem with noncompliance of their own citizens with paying their taxes, that's an issue that they must address within their state. And it's become unpopular to address because it requires things like audits. It's not a very popular issue because it requires things like the state of North Carolina going in and getting someone's visa records. It requires the state of North Carolina going and looking up warranty records. That's not popular, and that's precisely what would happen here within the state of Oregon if we allowed other states to draw us into this type of taxation scheme. What would happen is then you'd have these independent companies coming into Oregon businesses saying, we want to see your sales list. We want to see who you sold to. We want to see what you sold them. And essentially the software that's being proposed out there by both of these plans would track every single sale made by Oregon businesses. And therefore, there's also privacy issues and some other issues that people are concerned with related to this specifically. And that's what our bill is about. It's also about producing more economic development within the state of Oregon. We think we have a...
Mr. Walker, you heard the testimony earlier about the nearly universal support to the concept of not taxing access to the Internet. But you also heard some issues and questions about avoidance of sales tax in communities that have sales tax and this economy of scale issue, which I thought was very informative. Your bill either affirms the status quo, which is part of your written testimony, is something that you stand on, mm-hmm. that you don't want necessarily a revolutionary change, you just want to persist in not having additional burdens added to the lot of Oregonians who might find themselves enmeshed in the cartel's evil plan.
I don't know.
I think there's some sympathy here to that concept. But what we heard was that a tightening and a narrowing of focus to Internet access, the definition of Internet, and the definition of Internet use would gain universal support. But to go far beyond that, you may end up getting into the issue of what is electronic commerce, and could that actually be an issue that essentially is far broader than what I hear the intent of your bill. Could you give me some guideposts here?
Yeah.
Are you aiming at the broader application, or are you aiming at the access question?
We're aiming at the access question as well as the sales question, specifically sales over the Internet. So, for instance, it would affect companies that, whether they sell a book or whatever they might sell over the Internet, operating within the state of Oregon.
So what you're saying, or what you'd like your bill to do, essentially, Oregon retailers could sell into states with sales tax and avoid having the purchasers of Oregon products in those states that have sales tax help them avoid paying sales tax in their community.
Well, it doesn't necessarily help them avoid paying sales tax in their community because they're required in the law already to pay sales tax, a use tax. As a citizen in North Carolina, you have to pay. You're required in the law, civil and criminal penalty, to pay taxes. And there's penalties already in place for those who avoid paying taxes. The problem is that the state of North Carolina doesn't want to have to deal with tracking these people down and performing audits on them because it's very unpopular. They want us to deal with it instead. They want to place the burden on Oregon businesses. And the issue, there's an issue there too as well, related to the Interstate Commerce Clause. They don't have that authority to come into the state of Oregon and require Oregon businesses to collect taxes for them. They don't have that authority currently. What they're trying to do is authorize that authority.
Okay. Can I ask you about an analogy?
Sure.
Oregon has a weight mile tax that creates this relatively the same situation where Oregon auditors travel to 50 other states and essentially demand and receive access to the transportation records of companies that are based outside of the state of Oregon, yet do interstate transportation through the state of Oregon, and on our weight mile basis, we go get those records, do the audits, and collect taxes in that way. So in the model that you're proposing, would we not be able to do that?
No, you would be able to do that. This would only deal with...
Excuse me, with e-commerce issues, and other states would not be able to do that with our e-commerce issues.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Okay. The only time they would be able to do it is, and I think under that model with the weight mile tax, there is a physical use of, they're using Oregon's roads.
Yes.
They're getting a benefit from those tax dollars.
No question.
And that's the difference. Consumers in North Carolina or Oregon businesses receive no benefit from North Carolina. And I think the questions raised by the director of our revenue department about whether or not they actually get benefit are questions that still haven't completely been answered. And, you know, those questions will be debated for a while, but the way we look at it, they don't receive enough benefit. You know, I think it's so small that...
In relative terms.
Yeah, it doesn't justify...
What about access to courts? I mean, wouldn't you expect Oregonians to be able to collect a bad debt in Michigan or Massachusetts if a retailer here sold on the Internet to one of those communities?
Sure. And likewise, yes. And, we have access to courts today in other states currently, but we don't necessarily pay taxes every month through those 50 states. So we can continue to have access to those courts. I don't see how that would necessarily be affected by this either.
So the question of nexus is still one that we are wrestling with.
Yeah, absolutely. And on a national level, I think, and the director of our revenue department made that clear, this issue is not going to be resolved soon. Mm-hmm. What we are attempting to do here is put in place an environment that continues to allow this new economy to develop. And I really think this is the core behind this issue for us, at least, is we have no idea currently where this new economy is going to end. We've seen some ups, we've seen some downs recently, and we don't know what the final product's going to look like. And we want to make the environment, we want to keep the environment open for the development of that new economy. And that's one of the reasons we brought Jeff with us. Jeff is from Supertrax, which is a .com company. And there are a lot of companies, and if I can just hold this up, as a visual, this is small business computing, and this has Small Business 100 on it. These are 100 internet companies that operate over the internet. Some are brick and mortar / internet companies. This gives you a really good example of how companies are using the internet to make money. And not all of them would necessarily be affected by this in the sense of they don't necessarily always sell products. But what this does is show you how important it is for not only small companies but big companies and state governments that the internet and this new changing device that we all use in our life continue to develop. And there is question whether or not if we put these burdensome tax structures in place, whether or not that internet will continue to develop at the same pace it's developing today. And that has effect in other ways.
Two quick questions. Russ, first of all, we're not asking the people to do a constitutional amendment with Senate Bill 660.
No.
So that if we found out we had just, with the passage of this bill as you currently see it, had offered to the citizens a giant Costco-sized can of tax breaks, and if in fact, which I think is going to happen, next year we have annual sessions begin, there wouldn't be anything that would prevent us from coming back and saying, gee, we gave a great big Costco-sized can of tax breaks to the citizens, we need to take away their tax breaks, right?
That's correct, yeah. I mean, I don't think... I think we're all willing to work with the language so that we can tighten it up a little bit, but that is definitely not our intent, and we could change it very, very easily, and that's one of the reasons we left it statutory instead of going into a constitutional amendment.
Okay, and the second question I want to ask is one I wanted to ask Elizabeth, and that is this. it's a little bit different if Lands End sends me a catalog and solicits my business, or me go looking on the internet for an opportunity to buy something that might be similar to a product that Lands End had. Now, it does, in fact, the 92 decision clarify the difference between someone soliciting my business by sending me a catalog or someone knocks on my door, or me going out onto the internet and looking for it. To me, it is it's a completely different issue. And I was thinking about examples where I've bought equipment in California, and there's a real strict sense of how you get that delivered to Oregon as to whether or not you pay taxes. So we understand that there's a real decision made as to whether you solicited, they solicited, and how delivery occurred. Can you kind of clarify that for us? Because to me, there is a difference between that person soliciting, sending a catalog, and me going out looking for it on the internet.
Actually, Senator Church, I think you're absolutely right on that issue. And the proof of that occurs to me in the rights of rescission that consumers have. For instance, if a door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman comes to your door and makes a presentation in your home, and you make a purchase, you have a 3-day right of rescission, because that seller is selling unsolicited, come unbidden to your door, and he's soliciting your business. You've invited him into the home, mm-hmm. and made that agreement. There's a 3-day right of rescission on that sale. Conversely, if you go to an auto dealer, mm-hmm. where you come to their home of business and you make a purchase agreement there, there's no 3-day right of rescission there. And I think the difference is whether or not the business was or was not solicited by the consumer. You know, it's assumed if you go to a person's place of business, you're there to transact. Mm-hmm. It's not assumed that if somebody comes to your home, that you were in the frame of mind to transact. So I think the point of connection does make a difference at law, and maybe it's something that we need to be considering in this issue as well.
I think you're both correct. I would agree with that. In principle, that, you know, there is a difference. There's a significant difference, and I think the law looks at it differently.
Mr. Vanek, what can you do to inform the committee or add to the issue?
Mr. Walker asked me to come and talk, and Supertrax is a .com company. All our business is purely internet. We have no physical product. Our product is represented in bits and bytes over the internet. Mm-hmm. Specifically, we deal with music, and we'll be going into other areas, other content, such as books and video. Video will probably be our next product that we'll be selling. We're a company that has 65 employees. Five of those are in California, and the rest are here in Oregon. And our business provides a we're located here in Oregon because we like the standard of living here, we like the environment in Oregon, and we want to continue to operate in Oregon. There's been a lot of derision lately in the press about dot-coms and from dot-boom to dot-bust. And people seem to look at the sidelines and, you know, point their fingers now and say, we knew it couldn't be so good and it couldn't last so long. But the reality is that dot companies like ours are providing living wage salaries to its employees. We're raising our families here in Oregon because we can be employed in this new economy here. In fact, I'm an attorney, and I was actually went to school across the street at Willamette, where I got my JD, and I teach a class at Portland State University in professional development program for economy and law. These issues are very important to me. I moved out of state for a while because I was pursuing an economic opportunity that was out of state. It was actually to Utah, one of the states that are very aggressive in pursuing e-com businesses. Now, that's not the reason why my initial move was to Utah. But it was in Utah that I actually learned about e-commerce. It was through some bar associations there that are very aggressive in promoting it at all levels, from the development sector to the professional sectors. And I learned about certificates and e-signatures, and I got very interested in it. And Utah was very, like I said, this was a result of Utah's aggressive promoting of e-com in their business. Fortunately, there was an e-com business here in the state of Oregon, and I was able to move back. And that was Supertrax. It was a startup when I joined. I interviewed, and there was probably 5 employees. When I joined, I was probably about number 15 employee. We've been around for about 2 years now. We've gone through the dot bust, and now we're hopefully going to survive that. At one time, we had about 130 employees, with the majority of those being in Oregon. We had to change our business plan and our business model, and we've done that. And now we think we've got something that will be viable and will stay around. We'll continue to be able to employ people in Oregon and continue to provide the kind of family-raising salaries that our business provides to the people here. My wife and I plan to raise our family here, and we want our children to be able to grow up here and have economic opportunities as well. And so, therefore, we're in support of this bill. And when Mr. Walker asked me to come and testify on this, I was very happy to do so. We have concerns on a national level, some other issues that have to do with content and copyright. But as an Oregon business, we are definitely concerned about the environment in which we're doing business in, and how Oregon treats internet companies, how Oregon treats companies that not only provide a physical product, but those that provide, like ours, a strictly digital product. SuperTrax does not sell directly to the consumer. We're business to business. In the physical world, there's the music company who makes the songs, basically, and there's the retailers who then you go and buy your CD from. SuperTrax is the equivalent of the trucks and packaging that gets the song from those who produce to those who sell it to the public. We have a beta test with a local company here in Oregon as well. It's Jammin' 95 radio station. And we're doing some internet broadcasting, beta testing on a new product. And again, we are the equivalent of the packaging in the truck that would drive the product to the end user, to the person who's ultimately using that product. It describes a little bit better about what we do as a company. So we're very concerned about internet access and internet use, besides the overall general issues around taxation of the internet and the internet economy. Our founder, Charles Jennings, founded several companies in Oregon, GeoTrust being one of them, also an Oregon company. Our venture capital money, a significant portion of it, came from Oregon venture capital funds. And we think that's very important. And we also realize that we won't be able to, us or any company like us, will not be able to continue to get significant funding from Oregon venture capital unless there's an attraction for doing business here in Oregon. So it's very much of a concern to us. I'm glad that I had the opportunity to come back to Oregon, back to my roots, and to raise my family here. And I'm looking forward to them having the same kind of economic opportunities that I have now because of this new economy.
I got a couple of questions.
Sure.
Did tax treatment matter in the choice of locations for the company in Oregon?
That wasn't the primary concern, but ultimately it's part of the mix of doing business.
And when you do business into other states, how does your company deal with the plethora of different taxation strategies and rates?
Because we are business to business, most of the taxing issues are at the consumer level and those who are choosing to sell to the consumer. So our issues just have to do with those taxes that might deal with the business to business transaction.
Far less of a universe of business of taxation.
Right.
Okay. And you've seen the and heard the testimony today about the two foci here. One is a very wide focus, and that is the bill's language talks about e-commerce, and actually the specific term is electronic commerce, which would mean the entire universe of electronic commerce. And you saw how the horizons could be unlimited potentially. And the other one is a suggestion that we focus more on internet access and definition of internet use, which apparently is available somewhere in the building. How should this committee deal with either the macro or the micro issue? Should we focus on the micro issue and extend the status quo, or should we look toward moving toward the macro issue and talk about all internet taxation issues?
I think you should look towards the macro, although I definitely think you should deal with the micro. You have some specific proposals that I would agree with, and I think that we need to look at the big picture. As a business, we don't want to pay any taxes, but we know we have an obligation, obviously. And we want to be responsible and pay the taxes that are appropriate. We also want to make sure that we're not overtaxed.
You have to understand that it's our intention that you should be taxed here in Oregon and stay and grow.
And we agree with that,
yeah,
obviously.
That's the most gratifying thing about the testimony. Here's an e-commerce company that apparently has weathered the storm. That's gratifying. But I think it's really important that we hear your testimony, because actually of all the testimony offered today, that you're the only honest-to-gosh citizen that we've had here that had an e-business that would be affected by this taxation.
Glad to be able to add that then, because it is an important issue to us.
Yeah. And it's your testimony valuable. Thank you. Questions for this panel? Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tell us about the incentives that Utah provides to dot-coms to go to Utah. I mean, I think that should be an interest of us, because we're in competition. If we have you here and you make money, we tax you. So it's in our interest to have companies be here. What does Utah do that we don't do?
I can't speak to specific taxation issues because, as I said, I went to Utah originally. It was a different opportunity. It wasn't even in the e-commerce world. The e-commerce world was introduced to me in Utah, and that's where I made my decision to become involved in the e-commerce world. What they do is very aggressively promote e-commerce in the state at all levels. And in all, as I said, I learned about it from a bar journal that I received. The lawyers, the professional organization of lawyers, there was articles in that journal that explained to us as attorneys what e-certificates were, what e-commerce was, and that's what sparked my interest. Now, I came back to Oregon, and even though I'm an attorney here, I work in an e-commerce company, and I made that choice because of that, but I received my education of all places there.
Other questions from the panel? Colleagues, we have yet to hear from three witnesses that have signed up. I anticipate that this issue is going to come before the committee again. It sounds like we need to have some clarifications about whether we're going to go macro on this thing and send a strong message, knowing that whatever we do will be directly affected by federal legislation. And I'm not sure that federal legislation is pending anytime soon. It could be 2 years before we see anything. Mm-hmm. Or whether we go more toward the reassertion of the status quo in case the federal agencies or the federal government's ban against access taxation lapses, and then at least Oregon would be perceived as one of those places where e-businesses would be protected from access charges. And I think that's before us yet.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I may add.
Please.
I've read the Oregon Internet Economy I'm saying the report wrong, but it was a report put out by the Oregon Internet Commission report. And I think that has a very good message in it. As reading as a citizen and as a person in the e-com business, it had a very strong message. I wish more people had access to it and knew about it. That's the kind of thing that puts out a strong message that Oregon is the place to come and do business.
Is that commission report available?
Not on the net.
Not on the net?
It's actually available on the net. And in fact, I will be teaching a class tonight, and I'm having Senator Deckert come and speak to my class. And I've been trying to get a hard copy of that report, and I found I can only get it on the internet. And even Senator Deckert's office couldn't get me a copy. I ended up finding a hard copy in one of the law offices in downtown Portland. I went out to lunch with a friend and saw it sitting there.
If you can do this without violating a copyright law, we'd like to have a copy for distribution to the members. And we'll make sure the members have a copy.
Mr. Walker.
Mr. Chair.
On the net.
One more comment about the economy in general. I think the bill is important now, if I can say this, specifically because of the current environment we live in. It's not only important for us to send a strong message to people within the state of Oregon, but I think it's important for us to send a strong message nationwide. There is a great deal of effort in Washington, D.C. today to allow states to form these coalitions, if you will, and also allow and also explore ways that they can tax this new economy in other ways. And this is an issue, and it's an issue that's going to really be a hot issue this fall when the moratorium ends. And I think that's one of the reasons we should address it immediately. And if I can, in your testimony from Greg Drew, Greg Drew, CEO of 800.com, which is by far the largest e-retailer in the state of Oregon. And he really wished he could have been here today, but he had other engagements. in his testimony, he comments about the compliance cost if these, either of these two plans were to go forward. It would cost his business over $1.5 million a year to comply with either the best of those two plans. That's an enormous extra cost to a business that's struggling to just make it and to turn a profit and to show that e-retailers can have a model that's profitable. It's very important. He employs quite a few people in the state of Oregon. He's received numerous rewards, his company, for their efforts in e-retailing. So I would say please take a look at that testimony, because some valuable information in that testimony from Greg Drew as well.
Senator Byron, then what we're going to do is ask Jason Lins is here from the Taxpayer Association, Bill Riddell is here from Associated Oregon Counties, Mr. Burke is here from Senator George's office, but I believe he's testifying on his own behalf again today. The fact is that we will have this issue again before the committee, and I beg the indulgence of those three witnesses to hold their testimony until that opportunity. I think the committee is going to have to take a look at whether or not it goes to the macro scale. We'll get the report that you mentioned in your testimony, Mr. Vanek. And I think the sponsors of the bill need to come to the chairman and choose a direction. Either this relating clause works for a macro bill, or maybe it doesn't work for a macro bill, works for a micro bill. We've got to figure that out. But I believe that this committee looks very seriously at this issue, and I think there's a principle worth moving forward in this bill, and we ought to take some action. I think we ought to clarify what the action will be. Senator Byer, did you have some comments?
I concur with what you're saying. Some questions that I would appreciate having some answers to from staff, whether that's legislative counsel or from the revenue department. One is that broader issue of how this interrelates with that 1992 decision. Make sure that we're doing this right. You know, this question I've asked just was, I wonder if telephone sales are electronic commerce.
Well, I think we have the power.
That's an issue there.
As the legislature, we do have the power to define.
The other one is just clarity. It sounds like the, quote, cartels that are being discussed here are very similar to the, quote, IFTA cartel in the trucking industry. And my sense is that while these associations, whether it's the National Council of State Legislatures or the other one, I'm not sure who put that one together, that's still, in terms of enforcement within Oregon, that's still a decision of this legislature whether we're going to participate and sign on to the agreement or not. The other 49 states can do what they want. Our question is whether Oregon is going to do that or not.
Well, Oregon...
Just to be clear on that.
Oregon prides itself on being out of sync. That's leaving it on a lot of issues. Any other questions from the committee?
No, but that's a valid constitutional position to be in Oregon.
One question. This has been a refreshing departure from our normal... And for some reason, this seems like a simple and uncomplicated issue to me. So, if there's no other business to come before the committee, then we are in adjournment until Monday morning at 8:30.